Now, by the time the missionaries in Hollywood had their way with the Hawaiian Islands, hula dancing was little more than high camp and low art. But in its true form, hula was actually a kind of cultural semaphore, hidden signals and motions that tell a story, that connect a culture to the cosmos. And its secrets are still known to a select few. Dispatch's contributor Hadani Ditmars is there to hear them.
So we're driving along. This is sort of like the main highway in Molokai, is it, Julie?
Yes, this is Kamehameha 5 Highway, and we're heading...
I've come to the island of Molokai in search of the real hula, the sacred dance and chant so central to traditional Hawaiian religion.
How many people on the island?
We have about 8,100 people here.
I'm met by local Julie Bakoy. As we drive into town, past the coconut grove of King Kamehameha, a visual history lesson unfolds.
Along this area that we call Church Row, we have maybe about 7 different denominations next to each other. The land was given to them to use for their religion purpose.
Julie is a friend of hula master Filippo Solotario. Everyone here calls him uncle, both as a term of respect and affection. I'm honored that he's agreed to meet me at the home of his student, Matt Yamashita.
So where is this performance from?
Oh, this is just a practice on our back porch.
Uh-huh. 31-year-old Matt is a filmmaker with a BFA from a university in California. He runs a company called Quasi Films and is currently making a documentary on the history of hula. Matt and Filippo are showing me a video of a dance performed only on Molokai.
This dance was originated here. And it was originated by one of my great-great uncle. And,
legend has it that hula dance, was conceived here on Molokai when the goddess Laka made it a sacred dance.
Hula actually was an important religious symbol to our ancestors there. It was spiritual. It was done only by the men. Yeah, and was dedicated to the gods. Every move of your body, your expression, your hands, your eyes, and everything tells a story. And a lot of times it's a spiritual thing because hula, you have to have the proper spirit. Hula is like someone that is not here, our ancestors, but they are actually talking to the modern generation, that they're talking through dance and through our emotions because now you can't see them.
Filippo, like nearly 40% of Molokai's 8,000 residents, is Hawaiian by descent. He knows how traditional Hawaiian culture became vulnerable with the arrival of outsiders, and how hula in particular was frowned upon.
Hula went way back before during the times of king and queens, and during the time of the chiefs who governed the islands. At that time, each island was a sovereign of its own. And then women started taking over the dances, continued to do the ancient kahiko dances. When the missionaries came, it was a total different story. It wasn't very much spoken about the hula because everything was banned. Yeah, our language, the hula, the religion, it was against the white man's law. So no one was able to speak that or tell about anything about that.
So it was that for a time, real hula went underground, while Hollywood spread the image of grass-skirted and buxom beauties swaying to music played on the ukulele. Then, in the 1970s, a renewed interest in traditional culture and language and land claims helped revive hula. Uncle Filippo was part of this Hawaiian renaissance. He became a kumu hula, or hula master. He's like a father figure of sorts, known as Pops to young people like Matt, who came home to Hawaii after work and school on the mainland, looking for a link to their culture.
I think hula is, it's Hawaiian culture, it's dance, it's movement, it's storytelling, it's spirituality. But the way Pops taught us, it's also a tool for learning about culture and teaching culture. You know, it's something that the outside world is fascinated by, something that people think of when they think of Hawaii. But at the same time, it's not something to be sold, but we can see it as a tool to connect with the outside world, that the Hawaii that we know can be shared with integrity and accuracy.
Aia moloka iku iwa. Ike kula vale o kala upa.
Matt and Uncle Pilipo had the chance to do that recently when the biggest hotel in Molokai, called The Ranch, closed down. Its new owners had been seeking permission to expand. Locals were opposed to development that might harm Molokai's fragile ecosystem, even though a closure would cost them jobs.
The Molokai Ranch wanted to put up 200 luxury homes along that coastline, and the community fought it for 3 years, and in the end, the houses weren't built. And so last year, as a way to bring the culture back there and bring life back there and bring pride back to the place and to reconnect our people to the place, they actually did a closing of the Makahiki ceremony, which is a very ancient tradition. And we had the honor of being able to perform during that ceremony, and that just felt really, really awesome. I think anything that brings us back to a culture and our sense of identity, that gives us pride and understanding for who we are, no matter where you are from the world, is what this world needs and is what young people need to get back on track and to stay on track. And in Hawaii, for Hawaiians, hula is one of those ways.
Matt and Uncle Pilipo speak of pono, a Hawaiian concept that translates as right action, something that creates harmony. For them, culture, land, and identity are all tied together. It's something Pilipo says took him a lifetime to really understand.
When I was young, I remember Grandpa working in the lo'i, the charo patches, all mud, pasuni. And I was 16 years old, grumbling to Grandpa and Grandma and Mom and Dad that I want to get out of here. I don't want this kind of life. And Grandpa looked at me in Hawaiian and told me in Hawaiian, run your hand down from your feet, go all the way down till you feel your toes. So I did. I ran it all the way down. And I said, okay, I feel my toes, but below that is the ground. Then he said, do you feel the roots? And then I caught on what he says. And he just smiled. At age 69, I'm back in the valley doing the things that I said I hate to do. And I just love it because I'm back where I'm supposed to be. Yeah.
Pilipo teaches his students about the intrinsic connection between hula and the land by having them farm their own taro patches as part of their training.
There's one hula that Pops taught us. It's about the kalo harvest. It's a hui'iki kalo. And the entire dance is, walks you through the entire motion of the process of growing kalo.
So if you hadn't actually had the experience of farming kalo yourself, you would have had not as deep an understanding of how to dance it, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you can dance that hula with integrity if you didn't understand what you were dancing about. And the only way you can understand that is by doing it.
So this one here is the puniu. And the puniu is basically made of coconut and the different fibers.
Kanoi Davis is showing me her considerable collection of musical instruments.
So this is the sound of the uli uli. So more of a rattling sound, yeah?
For this 30-year-old single mom, hula is a huge part of her life. It's a way of both honoring her ancestors, whose dances and instruments she's inherited, and passing down her culture to her young daughters, both students of hula.
My great-grandmother's. And this is the kala'au, the sound of a kala'au, which is basically two sticks.
Mm-hmm. So what was your first introduction to the hula?
I was about 2 years old when I started dancing hula. Hula is a huge part of my family. And I started my hula here on Molokai with Uncle Billy Ka'aihue, continued hula with Auntie Loretta Reddy.
Now Kanoi teaches hula and has her own halau or group in Molokai. Kanoi works at the town newspaper, but she also volunteers at the local crisis center where she counsels battered women. She tells me she feels inspired by the queens and goddesses that are key to the hula stories she dances. She sees hula as a tool for empowerment and healing.
When I dance, and I dance about Pele, or I dance about Ka'iulani, or I dance about Lili o Kalani, or Hi'iaka Ikapoli o Pele, I am no longer Kanoi. I am those people. When I dance about the wind and the rain and the ocean and the mountains, I am those elements. I am no longer the person that gets abused physically, emotionally, mentally. I can step out of myself spiritually and watch my physical self dance and become somebody else. And that's what helps us heal.
Kanoe also writes her own hula chants, or mele.
I believe a lot of the chants and a lot of the olis held secrets of things that are happening at that time that they didn't want other people to know about. And so when these chants and these mele were written, it was to hide secret messages from other people for other people. And that's how stories got passed down. That's how the mo'olelo, the tales, became life, you know, a form of life. It was a way of inspiring others, inspiring self, and being able to pass down traditions that were not meant for everyone.
So far from being a titillating tourist dance done by girls in grass skirts, hula is a sacred tradition, with each chant or mele holding a special and very personal meaning.
The ocean inspired me today, and I wrote about how the reef is exposed to the beating of the sun. And for me, that meaning is right now is a time of vulnerability because the tide is so low that the coral reef is exposed to the sun. Things that are exposed and out of its own normal element are susceptible to things that can harm it. And so thus they answered, asked to permission to come in, and I answered and granted them that permission.
Just as her grandmother passed down her tradition, Kanoe is using hula to instill a sense of cultural pride in the next generation. The art form comes alive in the gestures and voices of Kanoe's daughters as she teaches them in her living room. Hula is showing young Hawaiians a way forward by bringing them back to their roots. For Dispatches, I'm Hadani Ditmars in Molokai.
And if you care to comment on Hadani's story or anything else you hear on our programs, just email dispatches@cbc.ca.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.